So my topic today is minority and majority language schools as arenas for promoting political engagement, a case study from Finland. I'm basically presenting my whole PhD to you. I'll focus on the more school related stuff, but I'll also tell you something about the other two articles because I think it's all interrelated to the same topic. So the big question of my PhD is why do Swedish-speaking minority adolescents in Finland have higher political self-efficacy than Finnish-speaking majority adolescents, and why does it matter? I've written four articles. The first one studies how socioeconomic status, social capital, and open classroom climate are related to the difference in political self-efficacy. And in that article, well, I'll tell you more about it later, but in that article, I find that open classroom climate is higher in Swedish-speaking schools, so that the students in those schools have higher political self-efficacy. So therefore, in the second study, I study with two colleagues why Swedish-speaking classrooms foster these more open classroom climates than Finnish-speaking classrooms. One reason we find there is that because Swedish-speaking students feel more belonging to their class, and here we come back to the social capital explanation, and that's studied in the third article of the PhD, and then finally in the fourth article, I study how political self-efficacy and a few other explanations are related to the voting intentions. So actually, the whole project can partly explain why we see that the Swedish-speaking minority votes consistently more often in elections than the Finnish-speaking majority. Of course, I only have the adolescents here, so I can't really say that the same explanations are applicable to 70-year-olds, but still, I find there's something there that could be applied to both other minorities and also adolescents who don't belong to minorities. So the case is Finland. Finland is a constitutionally bilingual country. Swedish and Finnish are named as the national languages in the constitution, and they have equal status. And this is even though Finnish is a lot more common language. About 85% of the population speak Finnish, and Swedish is a small minority language. About 5% of the population speaks Swedish as their native language. In addition, we have some small minority languages which are recognized in the constitution, and of course, foreign languages represented in Finland. We have about 10% foreign language speakers in Finland. And because of this constitutional bilingualism, the school system is also separated based on language from daycare to university. So actually, a Swedish speaker may go to only Swedish-speaking schools and daycare from the age of 1 to the age of 20, and never meet the reality of the Finnish-speaking education. So there's a really good possibility for different school cultures to develop because of the separated school system. This is not unique. There are other countries where school system is separated based on language, but in Finland, the minority is quite small compared to many other cases, like, for example, Belgium. On the other hand, social background is not a large factor in defining the allocation of children and adolescents to schools because there are no tuition fees. Even though there are some differences in and some segregation between different areas in large cities, which affect, still any child could go to any school, and the differences are much smaller than in many countries. So the big difference or the big segregation, if it can be called that way, is the language in Finland. Even though it's not segregated in the way that any language would be worse than the other, the Swedish-speaking minority is not disadvantaged like many minorities in the world. We have in the project data on 15 to 16-year-olds who are about to complete the final and ninth year of their comprehensive education. So until this point, they've all gone to the same schools that follow the same curriculum. We have somewhat over 5,000 adolescents with an oversample of adolescents who go to Swedish-speaking schools. We have somewhat over 1,000 of them. Almost 80 schools, almost 400 classes. And as you can see, there are many Swedish-speaking schools and classes as well. They are from all around Finland, including Åland. So we have a good regional representation there as well. In addition, we surveyed the same adolescents 2 years later when they were already in secondary education and in different tracks, vocational tracks and academic tracks. 1,331 adolescents replied to the follow-up wave. So not nearly as much as in the first wave, but it's still usable data. So about study one, in this study, because in this study I wanted to find out why the Swedish speakers have higher political self-efficacy. I probably didn't explain what political self-efficacy means, which is a bit bad, as I've talked already quite long, and it's a central concept. But it's the personal feelings of understanding politics and being able to take part in politics. Sometimes it's even included that the personal feelings of being able to influence politics. So it's the feelings, it's not the actual capabilities. Someone can know a lot about politics but still think that, oh well, I'm not that capable, I don't know that much, and someone else can base their knowledge on TikTok and think that they know a lot, even though they don't actually know that much, for example. And it's here we talk about the personal feelings because they are a really important factor for participation. It doesn't make a lot of sense to participate if you don't feel that you understand anything, or if you feel that you can't take part, if you feel that your voice doesn't matter anyway. So there's a gap. The Swedish speakers have a higher political self-efficacy according to the data, and I found three like common suspects, I could say. The Swedish speakers are often assumed to be born with a silver spoon in the mouth. That's actually a false stereotype, but it exists, and the Swedish speakers have, for example, a lower unemployment rate. So there are some factors that could explain that make the Swedish speakers have slightly higher socioeconomic status, but there's a lot of variation and it's not universal. So that's why I check the socioeconomic status there, and then I check social capital, because the minorities also known for their high social capital. And then I check the school, because, as I explained, the school system is separated, so there's a plenty of room for different school cultures to develop. Also, on the other hand, the Swedish-speaking learning materials are often older, because the market is smaller, and they are often not as high quality as the Finnish-speaking materials. They are good, but there have been found differences. So, to both directions, there might be reasons to look at the school. In analyzing the data in multi-level ordinary least squares regression design in blocks, I find that open classroom climate is one reason for the Swedish speaking schools and Swedish speaking students to have higher political self-efficacy. But it's important to note that not all Swedish speaking benefit from these schools, but only those who go to Swedish speaking schools, because you can choose. And some Swedish speaking adolescents may live in areas where there are no Swedish speaking schools available. So what I take from here is that it's important to support the development of an open classroom climate for political discussion. That is, it's important that, I didn't explain that concept either. So it's important that all students should have the possibility to discuss politics and societal topics, so that different opinions are valued and encouraged. There shouldn't be right or wrong answers to political value questions, and the teacher should encourage students to express their opinions, even though they differ from most other students, and even though they differ perhaps from the teacher's own opinions. And then an important question to my mind, why do Swedish-speaking schools foster a more open classroom climate than Finnish-speaking schools? And that's the topic of the second study. The second study uses generalized structural equation modeling with mediation and moderation. And here on the right, I have the theoretical model of the study. This is a joint project with two colleagues, Josefina Sipinen and Miikka Korventausta, and this is not published. It's currently under review in a journal, so you're among the first to see our results, but you should understand them as still being under review. So basically, we study how diversity in political values, more concretely in sociocultural values, that is whether you are liberal or conservative in your opinions about climate change and same-sex couples, rights and gender roles and so on, immigration. We measure it that way. We study whether this is on the one hand positively connected to open classroom climate, as we think that when there are different opinions and different values, it's a lot easier to have a diverse discussion than when all the students or most students agree on these topics. It's probably not that diverse if all the opinions are shared. On the other hand, based on social identity theory, we suspect that diversity in political values could weaken the sense of class community, because when you're different, it's not that easy to feel connected and feel that kind of sense of belonging. And the sense of class community is in turn shown to be positively connected to open classroom climate. So we basically suspect that there is a twofold relationship between diversity and open classroom climate, so that the direct relationship is positive, but then the indirect through sense of class community is negative. And then we suspect or assume that the minority may experience both of these mediated relationships stronger, because the minority is prone to experience minority stress and prone to promote social capital also in its more negative forms. For example, conformity, it's more important we assume that it's more important for minorities to stick together and to have similar values, to feel safe and thereby to discuss. And this is actually what we find. We find that here in the lower figures, you can see that in Finnish-speaking schools, in Finnish-speaking classes, we measure everything on the class level. The more diverse the political values are, then the more open the classroom climate gets. So in Finnish-speaking schools, this direct link between diversity and open classroom climate is stronger than the indirect link. But in Swedish-speaking schools, in the minority schools, the more diverse the values are in the class, the less open classroom climates we get. However, we also see that the Swedish-speaking schools still have more open classroom climates because they have quite descriptively higher sense of class community. So even though diversity harms the sense of class community more in Swedish-speaking classes, these Swedish-speaking classes still have a higher sense of class community. We expect that this is because the Swedish-speaking adolescents can be expected to share the same identity. Also, they are often quite small communities, so you may know most of your classmates from the daycare. That doesn't apply to all schools in all municipalities, but it's more common for the minority than for the majority because of the small size of the minority. We can also see here that class community, the effect of class community is stronger in the Swedish-speaking classes. So for the minority, it's even more important to feel to feel safe and valued and a part of the class community, to feel able to discuss, let's say, to feel able, because they probably are able, but some adolescents open their mouth and some don't. So here we come back to the social capital. A sense of class communities is of course just a little bit of social capital, but we find that it's important for the Swedish speaking minority. So therefore I studied with another colleague, Aino Tiihonen, how social capital is connected to political self-efficacy, but instead of just using one measure of social capital, as I did in the first study, we divided social capital into bonding social capital and bridging social capital. We divided the social capital refers to more bonding social capital refers to more close relationships and strong social support, often with similar people, whereas the bridging social capital refers to bridging relationships between usually different people, weaker ties, but to perhaps more people in general. That is, if you have bonding social capital, you have someone to ask, someone that can help you when you struggle in your life. If you have bridging social capital, you have someone that you can ask for, let's say, advice if you need information for something little, or if you need to, for example, interview someone for a school paper. If I summarize it, and within the social bridging social capital, we used generalized trust, also social trust may be familiar to someone. That is, whether you trust in people in general, whether you think that people in general can be trusted, or whether you never can be too careful with people. And then we used civic participation in different kinds of associations where you meet a lot of people. Then, as bonding social capital, we used social networks, which is mainly networks at school, whether you think that you have friends, whether you feel like you belong at school, and then community, whether you feel that you're meaningful to someone, whether you feel that that you belong to any community that is meaningful for you. We formed these measures using exploratory factor analysis and then confirmatory factor analysis. And summarizing the results, we expected the minority to have stronger bonding social capital because of the shared identity and because that shared identity could be assumed to facilitate forming these closure ties. On the other hand, we assumed the minority to have weaker bridging social capital because the minority unfortunately still meets discrimination and harassment even. And because if you don't know the language, it's more difficult to get involved in some kind of activities. For example, let's say voluntary associations, if they are in a language that you don't speak. Of course, many speak Finnish, even though they are Swedish speaking, but not everyone, and not everyone is comfortable speaking Finnish. What we found, it was that the minority indeed has higher bonding social capital, and through that, they also have a higher political self-efficacy. But the minority doesn't have lower bridging social capital. I personally think that it's because the Swedish-speaking minority is well integrated, and I think we also wrote it in the paper that it's also a sign that it's important to integrate minorities, because it's not given that minorities should have lower social capital than majorities, even after successful integration. So it's the Swedish-speaking minority is kind of an ideal minority here, because of their integration. Other minorities might have lower bridging social capital still. Also, because we also found that social networks are stronger among the minority, I would say that the schools are important even when cultivating social capital, because schools can, and schools, to my mind, also should foster social relationships between children and adolescents. It's one of the most important, if not the most important, social arena for the young children to find friends and form new friendships and even deepen old friendships. And it's a place where everyone should feel safe. It's not this is not as much related to the topic of today's talk, but I think it's still important, and it's linked to the topic still. And finally, in the fourth article, I'll try to be quick so that you'll have time to ask questions and I'll have time to answer. Again, with generalized structure equation modeling. This is not a published paper. It's in review. I study what does it matter? So what? Why should we care about whether a minority has whether a minority feels competent in the political arena? Well, we can see that political self-efficacy is an important predictor of voting intentions, and even when also having these other two pathways, civic duty to vote, that is whether you think that it's important to vote, or that it's your duty, everyone's duty to vote in national elections, and relational partisanship, which is basically whether you share your party identity with people that are close to you. Even though these pathways are also controlled, we find that political self-efficacy explains the higher voting intentions among this group of adolescents, and I would dare to generalize to other Swedish-speaking adolescents, but I I think it should be studied also with other minorities. So if your teachers, I can't tell you how to teach because I'm not a pedagogical expert, but I would love to say that it's important what you do, and that the political discussions in class are important, and it's important that the children and adolescents feel that they belong to the school, to be able to also become fully active and fully capable political people and adults in our modern societies. So that's my presentation. I'm happy to welcome all questions and all comments, and I'm really grateful for your attention. You can reach me by email if you think of something later, or if you don't want to ask now. Thanks a lot.